Radio Berkshire.
Now, were you here this time yesterday? Have you already been to a very special club that we're visiting at this time all week on the Peach Show? We're calling it the Homeless Hearts Club. Bring on our musician, Frank.
I've been a wild rover for many a year, and I spent all my money on watching and beer. But now I return with gold and great store, and I never will play the wild rover no more. And it's no name never, no name never no more will I play the wild rover. And no never.
He's good, isn't he? Frank is one of our homeless people who's been taking part in a project that we've been running at Serena Hall in Slough. And one of the things that's involved is bringing the people who use the services of Serena Hall, which looks after people with some level of homelessness going on, together to enjoy music like Frank's Wild Rover. It's run by Shock, Slough Housing Our Concern. We've been working with them not only to bring music to the place, but also to encourage people to talk to each other, to tell their stories, and to perhaps write down how they feel about how they ended up in the situation they're in, either in letters or poems or songs. And we're hearing some of those. We're meeting some of the characters we met on the programme this week. Now, if you've got preconceptions about what a homeless person might be like, I want to introduce you to a couple of guys who are in the studio this morning, who I met at Serena Hall, that might just change those preconceptions. David McIsaac is a former JP, university lecturer, and former mayor of Slough. Hello, David.
Hello, Andy.
And we've got Robert, who's another musician among our Homeless Hearts Club members, a guitarist. Robert's got an amazing voice, as you'll hear in a second or two, and he's here in the studio too. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
And the thing that unites both Robert and David is they've both got some personal experience of homelessness. Robert, first up, tell me about your getting involved in what happens at Serena Hall. How did you come across the place?
Well, it was through... I was living rough at the time in Dedworth. I'd gone to make contact with my son, one of my sons, and I was sleeping in the churchyard. Prior to that, I was made homeless by the Housing Association. I'd been homeless since last July. I've only recently, in the last few weeks, got a place, praise the Lord, you know. And it was Louise, the lady vicar, who kindly brought me over, and she was very kind to me. She gave me coffee a few times while I was homeless in Windsor, wondering how to make contact with my kids. She fed me, watered me. The people in that little church were very kind, and through that, I was very dishevelled in a bad way, and I ended up in Serena Hall.
It started off with relationship breakdown for you, didn't it? The story of this led you to sleeping in a churchyard in Windsor.
Well, yeah, I went back a very long time ago, yeah. And my eldest son is coming up 33, and my youngest boy is coming up, I think he's nearly 15 now.
One thing that I thought was interesting about your story, which I actually found replicated in quite a few people's stories, you've travelled all over the place. You've been to Portsmouth, to Oxford, all over, and you gravitate back to Slough and Windsor because it's where you've got some roots.
Yeah, well, initially I was going to... when I became homeless, I want to go and paint landscapes and go and be on the South Coast, which I'm an artist. I paint and I draw and I sculpt. And and when I found that my youngest son has had Crohn's disease, which I've never heard of, I had vaguely heard of it, and I'd lost contact with him and his mother for nearly 6-7 years. And then my son, who's in the Slough area, is tetraplegic in a wheelchair for the rest of his life due to a car accident. I thought, well, I'll put myself slap bang in the middle. I used to teach art and work in Slough. I had a small business in Slough years ago. And I thought, right, somehow, and that's my goal, is to somehow unite them.
There's got to be more to it, though, hasn't there? Because a lot of people will go through relationship breakdown and have, you know, challenges with their kids and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But not everyone ends up homeless. So why, in your case, was that, you know, part of the story?
Oh, blimey. Well, for my part, I would say it was apathy, lack of interest, and supposed isolation and depression. Stuck out in a satellite in a little council estate in the Ascot area, with not much prospect of anything really in that locale. Beautiful locale as it may be, there's not a lot going on. And I find Slough a far more vibrant and colourful and lively place, you know.
If you are without a roof over your head, without anywhere to stay, in Windsor, Ascot, Slough, where do you sleep?
Anywhere you can. Wherever, what was the song a friend of mine said? Get a request of wherever I lay my hat down is my home. Or that was something else. Well, anyway, no, we're not doing requests.
How do you choose where to sleep?
Well, that's a matter of... you become like... You can kind of become at times like a sort of prowling kind of wolf. Not in a predatory sense, because when you're homeless in a vulnerable position, in a lot of cases, you're the hunted. And if people know that you're homeless, they know that you've got a phone, say they know you've got a guitar, say they know you've got other homeless people, not just other homeless people, but youngsters, you've got all this coming at you, the police as well. I'm not saying the police have helped me, actually, in quite a few ways. But their hands are tied in a lot of ways. And there's a kind of... I've discovered a culture or a kind of subculture I didn't even know existed. Or I kind of knew it existed, but I'd never experienced before.
You said you perhaps didn't imagine you'd be part of it, as most people working here at the BBC, listening to the radio right now, don't think we're ever going to be part of this subculture. Yeah. But what I've really learned from meeting you and other people at Serena Hall is it could be any of us. It could be any of us, you know, over the next few months, couldn't it?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. Yes, it could, actually, because, I've just found out recently, and it's going on a lot specifically in certain areas in Slough where certain landlords are just changing people's locks, because people who were previously homeless and being with homeless people have been letting homeless people staying on their floors, and then the landlords, they're in breach of contract, so they come along, change their locks, throw their stuff out, and make, instead of just one person homeless, they're making their friends back on the street again. And it leads to animosity. They get bitter, they get angry, and they're not pussycats, these boys and girls.
Let me bring on David now. David McIsaac, people will know you as the former mayor of Slough, and you now volunteer at Serena Hall, where this work for homeless people goes on. Tell us a bit of your story, though, because I was really surprised by the reason you gave me as to why you volunteer, why you're so interested in this particular subject of all the good causes there are around. Share it with us.
Okay, well, it's a long time ago now, but I say it will surprise some people to know that I had a short period of homelessness myself. This was, I was working in a hospital, things had gone wrong in my life, I'd lost my job, and then when you lose your hospital house, if they say it was due to you've made yourself homeless because of discipline, your children could be taken into care and you'd end up on the streets. So for a while there, I had my parents look after my children. And for a short period of time, till I got a job in another hospital, which had a single nursing room, I was actually homeless and myself, and had the experience of sleeping in bus stations and that period. So I actually know what it's like when you're actually very depressed and very low down in your life, how life can change, which would surprise people.
And reflecting on it now, what emotions, what feelings do you recall from that, you know, low period in your life where you're sleeping in a bus station?
That period of time, and as to say, it is a long time ago, so I've moved on for about the time, you just feel there's no way out of it, that you can't possibly get out of there. You've had everything, because I'd lost my first wife from cancer, I had my children in care, I never thought I'd see him again. Lost my job, the career I was doing, and it looked like everything had gone wrong and that nothing was going to change. So you feel the lowest of the low, and you wonder whether it's worth carrying on.
How did you get out of it? Because, you know, very common recurring theme is how difficult it is once you've left, you know, what you might think of as normal life, the norms of society, to get back in there, however much you want to.
Well, I think it was a great help with my parents helping to look after my children and then getting a job at a nursing home, then just working my way through, then meeting my present wife. And then we got together and we cleared debts and we met up and had the children again. So it was persistence, but it was a long haul back. And I wouldn't say it was easy. You don't always let everybody know too much about your past as well, because that will prejudice them when they're... But I've, since then, of course, I went on career, became a teacher, lecturer, and as you know, counsellor and then mayor. And it just shows that if I can do it, others can as well. But it's not easy.
Confident, articulate guy like yourself, you still feel a little bit uncertain about telling people what you've just told us now because of perceptions and prejudices people have.
Well, once you've made it, you know, once you've been successful, it's okay, I think, now to tell people. But I'd be, to be honest, and I've shared this with some of the, because I do some counselling with some of the homeless people, that initially, when you're first trying to get up the ladder and get back into life, you will meet a lot of prejudice. You'll meet people making judgments about you. And unfortunately, the less you don't have to reveal too much, and you can tell these things later on once people have accepted you. But that's the truth in life, unfortunately.
Do you find that, Robert, when you've been homeless much more recently, do you rub up against people who, well, make assumptions about you, shall we say?
Oh, yeah. If say you haven't washed or shaved for days and days on end, your clothes look tatty, you've been in and out of... I remember staying in a hostel in Portsmouth. There was a kind of little exodus to a kind of day centre, and there was all the homeless, and everybody knew that these were the homeless coming out of the shelter. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were rough as well, and there was this kind of standoffish attitude. Justified or unjustified, doesn't really matter, but it was there, you know.
What do you think people think of you as a homeless person? In Dedworth, in Ascot, in the places that you've lived in our area very recently, in recent weeks and months, what kind of attitudes do you think people...
Yeah.
Perhaps people listening to us right now have about you as a person.
Well, I've had people saying to me, oh my God, you're better than this, and you should be doing this, you should be doing that. But, you know, depression, when it hits you, is a real thing. And it doesn't matter what kind of, what circumstance it leads you to that, it's a hell of a hole to get out of. And to be honest with you, a bitter irony was the fact that I was homeless. Kind of, I felt on a daily basis that my depression was lifting, although my despair, if you like, and my situation kind of was increasing. And my immediate situation for getting warm, I mean, I felt like I was cold for almost 3 months. I couldn't even get warm sitting for 5 or 6 hours in a warm place. My bones were cold to the bone, as they say, you know.
I bet. We're going to hear much more from Robert and from David coming up. We're going to reunite Robert with Louise, the vicar in Dedworth, who really helped him out when he was at a low ebb. And as you've heard, it can happen to anyone. If you've been through a period in your life where you didn't have somewhere to call your own, I'd love to hear your story too on 0845 900 1041. So we've been hearing a bit of Robert's story this morning, and we know that a friend of this programme, Reverend Louise Brown from All Saints in Dedworth, plays a part in Robert's life, so we're going to do a bit of a Cilla Black moment and reunite you. Hello, Louise.
Hello there, Andrew.
Good to have you with us. Tell me when you first encountered Robert.
Many, many, many years ago.
That's true, yeah.
Many years ago. And he was somebody that wandered into the church. Occasionally he would sit outside my church and play his guitar, actually, I remember. Mm-hmm. And he never asked for very much. Odd cup of coffee I gave him. And it's fantastic to see him now, because the last time that I think he came in was when I took him over to Serena Hall and got him...
in a bad way.
He was in a bad way, but he was different. And I think he'd come to that point where now was the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've recognised in all people, in all situations, that there comes a moment when actually the tide's going to turn.
I'm thinking, right now I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah, yeah. Or you get so hopeless and helpless.
Well, do you know that night in that church, I slept for maybe half an hour, woke up 5 minutes. I was soaked to the skin. Mm. And I just kept saying, please, God, take me now.
So I think it's a moment. And I think that if you're like me, want to be there for people at those moments and have a church that's open as much as you can, then you recognise the moments. And certainly Rob was different that day.
Mm.
Whereas all the other days we'd just talked or whatever. Mm. But that day he was different.
For a lot of people, if you had Robert sitting outside your house playing his guitar, certainly if he came back again and again, you'd be calling the police and saying, there's a bloke here and I'd like you to come along and move him on. So what's different about you? Because that wasn't your reaction.
Of course it wasn't my reaction. But I'm not going to say that I wasn't at times, that you're not at times frightened by people, you know, who are sitting there, because you feel vulnerable as well. But the difference is actually they're people. And I don't categorise and say, well, that's a homeless person, that's a person who's an addict. They're just people. And Rob was just Rob, and he just became part of the people that come through the church and sit outside the church. And if you see them as people that are going to threaten you and do something about it, you actually aren't there for them. And I think certainly the role of a vicar is to be there for all people. And then you also then get the joys and the blessings of seeing people then change their lives. So I think it's both. If you welcome people and acknowledge your own vulnerability, I think you can then just love them, and in return you see great blessings.
Was this an unusually warm reception that you got from Louise Rob? Because it's interesting, I mean, it's perhaps a sort of traditional thing to gravitate back to churchyards, but you did keep going back. Was that partly about Louise?
No, it's just because the next morning I was going to go and see the mother of my oldest son. And the state I was in, you know, the way I was dressed, the fact I hadn't shaved, I looked like I'd been dragged, literally, I had been dragged through a hedge backwards. And in point of fact, I walked down to a friend, spoke to her, and I said, look, I'm not going to keep this rendezvous. And I went back to your church. And how I got back to your church, I don't know, because I could hardly walk, I could hardly carry my bag. And I was covered in mud. I was soaked, if you remember.
I do remember.
Yeah, and I remember that day very well.
What was it that made that the day where you thought in your mind, I'm going to do something about this? I've come to a point now where I don't just want to carry on. So if I'm going to remain alive, I'm going to have to, you know, get things going differently in my life.
My children. Every time.
And then between the two of you, mm-hmm. you ended up going to Serena Hall and then getting a
bit
of help.
This lady baptised my son.
I was just about to say that I think when you're a vicar of a community, you're always seeing people in relationship to other people and their families and what they may have lost as well as what they've gained. So, yeah, and baptism, funerals, all those services link you with people.
David, in the studio, I mean, you volunteer at Serena Hall, so you meet Rob and a lot of the other guys that I now know at Serena Hall. Do they all have a Louise in their lives? You know, someone who's been instrumental in helping them out?
Not always, no. I mean, there's such a mixture out there. So some have come in initially just to look for food, and then as they've gone and built up trust, then they've started moving on. Others have, as like Robert, have had someone that's brought them there. But we really got a very diverse. I mean, there's an ex-soldier, Tom, who got injured in the war, and he's now, you met him, didn't you, when you were...
Yes, indeed, yes.
Yeah, and so he's been invalided out of the service, but he's struggling. People have got sort of different stories in different situations, and some we're going to help, and others, unfortunately, we may just have to maintain for a while till that, like you say, that moment comes.
One of the big movers, one of the big factors that leaves people without a home, especially in East Berkshire, is immigration. We're going to hear now a conversation between Robert, who we've been meeting, and his friend Chris. Chris is from Poland. Together, they've been reflecting on their experiences of living rough, and Robert's been passing on some pearls of wisdom.
I remember my first night was, and I had a really good night's sleep, and that was in the woods. So that was maybe June or July. and the leaves on the forest floor were really, really nice and warm because of the heat of the sun during the day, and I slept out. And I felt a sense of relief and a sense of freedom, but also foreboding about, oh my God, now, where do I go from here?
I wasn't like that. Yeah. I haven't had it like that.
Mm.
I slept on the airport for like, I don't know, a week?
Uh-huh. And then where?
No, and then the police came in, you know, you just gotta go from here, you know what I mean?
And where did you go from there?
And I came to Slough, yeah, I came to Slough.
Inside, I'm very angry, in a way, about how things have worked out. I'm angry that I let myself get so down about things that I didn't do anything about it. But, do you know, as soon as I was homeless, my depression started to lift, if you like, because I was just me on the streets,
mm-hmm.
moving from place to place,
mm-hmm.
staying in different places. I stayed in Brighton, Portsmouth, popped down to Cornwall for a while, then back up to Yorkshire, down to Slough, back to Brighton, Reading, Oxford. I'm quite happy living my secular monastic life and living in a different way mentally now.
Yeah.
The summer is coming now.
Yeah, it's coming.
We're on the way, we're in spring.
But summer is coming, and it's like, look, yeah. I don't have any money to go for a beer to a pub.
Look, just hang on.
You know what I mean? To sit in a summer, to have a pint or something.
You're 31 years old, yeah. right? You're articulate. I mean, if I could speak Polish as well as you speak English, I wouldn't be sitting here now, because I'd know exactly what to do. You're too one-dimensional. You should think in a three-dimensional way.
I can think three-dimensionally. Yeah.
Can you now?
Yes,
yeah.
I can think.
Well,
yeah.
Get a job in that case and then prove it to me.
That's what I'm trying to do right now.
Yeah. All right, you imagine that you are the man who runs this place. How do you think he sees you?
Funny.
He thinks you're funny?
Yeah, funny. I don't know, maybe. Yeah, but funny. Communicative.
Okay. Does he think that you've got a chance of a job and a place to live?
Right now?
Yeah. Have you pushed him to try and get you a place?
No.
Well, why not? You're a fool if you don't. You're not really saying how you think society views you.
Why should I pay attention now how society sees me?
Because if you want a job and if you have these aspirations, you've got to have...
pay attention on work that I do. If I just need an employment, that's all I need, you know what I mean?
But anyway, I'm going to tell you now about how I think people view me.
Okay.
I think they view me as a bloody idiot. I think they think that I'm a sort of, what is it, a bit of refuse. But I'm an artist, you know, and I go out, I take my guitar, I go on the streets, I sing my songs. I've had times where I've had absolutely no money whatsoever, but I've survived just by whatever means I could. You know, I romanticise myself as a poet warrior. I think I still have a little tenacity left to one day at least prove a point to my children who I love through my art, and through, hopefully they can see the sincerity in it, because I did it for them.
Robert and Chris talking to each other. It's interesting to hear you giving Chris quite a hard time about his situation there, Robert, but I have to tell people listening that as a result of that, Chris is not here taking part in our discussion.
No,
Chris has gone and got a job.
No, he went off to Sweden.
Uh-huh. But he's gone to get a job in Gothenburg, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was a bit of a dark horse, wasn't he, really? No, I mean, you know, I came to... it's funny, because after that interview, he made something... I put him up... The first night I got my place, okay? No, I shouldn't say this, because my landlord might be listening. But it was only one night, though. I put him up on the floor the first night I was there, because it was absolutely perishing outside. Okay, and he was wandering around with these bin bags and all the rest of it. And I said, go on. I said, look, as long as you keep quiet, I said, and just, you know, stick to what I say. I said, I don't want anyone seeing you in here. I said, I'll put you up. And next thing you know, he started to... I mean, I sounded like I was patronising him about get a job. I mean, you know, that's something I aspire to myself. And I hope to get one soon as well.
I was going to ask you a bit about, you know, what happens now. You're now in a new place, in private accommodation. What are you hoping the next step for you will be? What are you trying to do now in your life, Robert?
Well, as I keep saying, that the thing that's driving me is to unite. I want to have a day, one day, and I, by the grace of our Lord, I will be in the same room as my two boys and try and make peace with both of them, whatever arguments or whatever axes they got to grind with me, let them grind them, you know, and I, you know, make peace with them, you know, because in spite of all of it, I'm their father, I care about them, and if they don't think so, I think about them every day. I pray for them every day, whatever that is. And even for the ladies that bore them as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you want to say to Louise, who made a big difference along the road of your life and your journey so far? Mm.
Well, I'd like to say to Louise, there should be a lot more people like Louise around. I mean, you know, she was... I said this thing years ago. Nursing is a hands-on job, not a hands-off job. And I suppose that goes to, you know, people of the church and people who say they're going to actually do something. Is they actually do something, not say they're going to do something. The homeless people don't need people singing songs at them, clapping hands and telling them they're sinners and things like that. We all know that, as Louise will probably reiterate. We know that. But
she's laughing away listening
but
to this.
When you've had three nights under a tree and you're getting snarly angry with someone that just tried to rip you off and try and run off with your guitar and whatever, and then, you know, what you need is you need people who are going to help. And I had this thing yesterday, and I won't say... I was at Serena Hall yesterday for breakfast. And by the way, I must tell everyone that people do not sleep at Serena Hall. People are under that false illusion that they've got beds and things. There's nothing. There's nothing in Windsor. There's nothing in Slough. Yeah. Where people can actually get refuge, sure, off the streets. So everybody is sofa surfing, or that's the colloquial thing for jumping from sofa to sofa. I've done it loads of times. On people's floors, friends in Maidenhead, old Rico, loads of people everywhere have helped me, my good friends. But there comes a time where the enough is enough and you just got to get on with it.
Louise, what do you want to say to Robert?
I'm just absolutely thrilled, Robert, that you've got a place. And
yeah, but that's luck. It's
luck and prayers. And I just want to say that it's people like you that inspire people like me to go on helping. And you're absolutely right. Unless we can find places of hostels in all of our communities, if we could have hostels, small hostels in all our communities, we could actually rescue an awful lot of people and be blessed by their presence in the community.
Okay, well, Louise, thank you very much indeed for doing what you do and being part of the show. And Robert, it's been a privilege to get to know you. Thank you for being on the show, and good luck to you. I'm going to catch up with a young woman now who broke our hearts a year ago when we heard a bit of her story. Sophie is one of a number of people taking part in this project who are living at the Foyer in Slough, which provides housing for young people who would otherwise be on the streets. Her story goes like this. She was taken into care at the age of 2 and then very quickly adopted. That should have made Sophie one of the lucky ones. But as soon as she reached adulthood, and I mean like on her 18th birthday, she was totally rejected by her adoptive family, as she told me.
The day going home and it was actually, no, you're out now. That was very hard.
So this came sort of out of nowhere that, you know, one day...
Pretty much.
Tell me about the conversation. How did they tell you that?
They just told me by just sending me to pack my bags and that. And then they all locked themselves into the bathroom, so I wouldn't be able to say goodbye to any of them. So even just the fact I didn't get to say goodbye, it makes you feel hopeful that it isn't for long, that you'll be back, but it's not.
So, I mean, although you got to a stage of being a grown-up yourself, being rejected by the only parents you've ever had, that's quite a lot to deal with.
It is, because you look at it, you've already been rejected once, now you're rejected again. It's like, you don't know what you've done wrong. They didn't give me any proper reason on to why. Why would you just pick up a child and then just ditch them? Graduation will come. your parents won't be there. Different things that might come up, you would want your parents to be with you, and they won't be.
Hmm. And you're still in touch with any of these people you grew up with your adoptive parents and adoptive siblings? You have any contact with them at all?
I'm in touch with them, but they're not really in touch with me.
So, what do you mean, you write to them?
I'll write to them, loads of letters.
And say what sort of thing?
I'll just be telling them exactly what I'm doing each day, like, hoping they're all okay, asking them to write back, asking how my younger brother is, but, again, you can't force them to write back to
you. And they don't? You just get nothing back in return?
In the 6 months, I've only had one note, really.
Which said what?
It says, "We are all well. Glad you are getting on well with your work and settled in your routine."
And that's that?
That's it.
And that's, I mean, just tell looking at you, it's not enough, is it? It's not enough for
you? It isn't. When you've lived with these people all your life, you think they're your family, and you don't think any other way about them. And obviously, I'm not their family, otherwise they would be in contact.
The fact is that months on from that conversation with Sophie, she's still trying to reconnect with her adoptive family. She's still writing those letters. And now she desperately wants their blessing as she embarks on a new journey.
Hi, Mum. Missing you lots, hoping that we can meet up soon. Really miss seeing you and the whole family. And I've got some really big news to tell you. It's news that will probably be really, really hard for you and Dad to take in, but I really do hope that you'll be able to accept the news I've got to tell you and help me to be able to follow through what I've started now, which is another journey, and I really, really want you and Dad to be part of it. I've managed to track my birth mum down now. And that is what she's been waiting for, clearly, is for me to find her. And she's answering my questions, and she wants to meet me in July, which would be great.
When I look into your eyes...
I was feeling really, really scared, and as soon as she replied to me and gave me all the information and sent the photo that I have, so I know it's definitely her...
There's so much they hold.
Oh, I think I gave the receptionist a heart attack. I literally opened it thinking, oh, what's this? And then as soon as it said, "Your loving mother," I've just jumped over the desk, hugged her, gone running, screaming to the office, gone jumping around the circles in the lounge for ages, thinking, oh my God, it's done, it's done, it's done.
I won't give up on us, even if the skies get...
You feel so relieved. You're like, oh my gosh, it's over. You've got there. And then after that, it's just, well, now I have to meet her because you've made that connection.
And when you're needing your space.
That's all she is a couple of words on the page at the moment. But when I meet her, I don't know if she'll be like me, whether we'd get along, whether we're the same kind of personalities. I know lots of people who miss their mums a lot because they can't ever speak to them.
The stars stay, burn, some even...
She started to become more of a person and more questions are coming up.
We got a lot to learn.
I'm like, actually, whilst my mum's still here, I want to have that connection.
The latest in Sophie's story. We'll keep you in touch with Sophie, I promise, because I'm so moved by hearing what's happening in Sophie's life. We do want to maintain contact with her and see what happens next. David McIsaac, who helps out at Serena Hall and is the former mayor of Slough, is here in the studio. Can you bring together any commonality into how people like you, like Robert, like Sophie, end up homeless? What are the driving factors going on in people's lives?
Well, it's a mixture. I mean, most people, it's a depression when things start going all wrong, and if you haven't got the support structures there, or decisions that you've made, which has taken you down a path. Others, like for example, the Poles, they came across here for work. But as most people don't realise, even though you've got a European passport, you've got to work for a year before you're entitled for benefits. And many of them were used as cheap labour. The language was limited. And then, of course, they got sacked by their employers, and now they can't go back. So we've got quite a few of those.
Mm.
I don't think there is a sort of commonality. I mean, if I was going to say the most common thing would be depression, mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of our clients, you met them, have got mental health problems, who should have more support. I used to teach mental health nursing, and as the nature, we've moved away from supports of hospitals that used to look after and perhaps take a long time to get people support. Now it's this great quotation marks care in the community, which is just not working.
So depression, mental health can be the sort of route into this. Sometimes that's associated with relationship breakdown or something of that sort going on in your life. I mean, people associate homelessness with addiction, alcohol and drugs. My reading, for what it's worth, from the stories I've heard, is that that's more a symptom of homelessness rather than a cause of it.
It's a mixture. The majority is, as you say, it's a symptom. When life is very down, you're going to turn to something that's going to make your mood change, dull your senses, whatever it is, whether that's drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, or whatever people use that. Now, there are some that have become alcohol dependent or drug dependent and then become homeless. That it's no good denying that. That's a feature. But whenever you go into the individual's background, you can see the factors that led to it.
And if there was one thing that you'd like there to be to help people who are homeless, or perhaps even better, to stop people, you know, getting to that point, what would that be? I mean, Robert talked about hostels, there being more places that people can actually properly stay. What do you think the thing would be that would make a difference?
Well, two things. First of all, I agree with Robert. It's hostels where people can actually have a place, a roof over the head that gives them a base, because often, and then an address to start working from. But also, as I say, because mental health is such the major problem with many of our clients, the fact to serve is for actual residential care, because these things can't be treated by simple drug or injection. As sometimes some people are currently believing, they need a long-term period of rehabilitation. And I haven't worked in mental health before. We've had clients like this, and we did help them after a long period of time get back into society. But if you don't have those structures, then these people are going to get worse. And it's going to be a tragedy.
Really interesting. More tomorrow. Thank you very much indeed for coming in, David. Good to see you.
Okay, thank you, Andrew.
Former Mayor of Slough, David McIsaac, here on BBC Radio Berkshire.